Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom, and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
All right, everybody, it's Sunday, and we just got back from the Patriot Family Reunion. I hope everybody is doing well. And I'm just sending out a brief message blast. I know it's kind of short notice. I wasn't sure if I was going to feel like getting on tonight or not, since we literally just pulled in the driveway from Indiana. But I think I've got enough left in me to do a brief show at least. And so we're going to send out a little blast for everyone. And if anybody is listening, I don't see anybody in the chat yet. We just did get the chat up and running. And we sent out a blast. I don't see much activity going on in the Patriot Family's chat room either. And, of course, quite a few of our fellow Patriots from the Patriot Family are still at the gathering up in Indiana. And I must admit, I am somewhat envious that they're all still hanging out together and I am here at home. But it is good to be back home and back to reality, I suppose, from the ever-so-brief respite from the rat race. You know, I've got to say that my wife and I were very much humbled to be in the presence of all of our fellow Patriot Family members that were able to attend, and most certainly humbled to be in the gracious hospitality of Mr. Bill Strong and his wonderful, lovely wife, Jolene, and their beautiful family. And I think it was something that I personally needed to perhaps get me grounded once again in my own roots. In as much as I have any, I have been a bit of a a wanderer in my days. But nonetheless, most of my values and ideals stem from my community and my life spent in rural Illinois, growing up on and around a farm. And I had nearly forgotten the sense of community and family that is so often taken for granted. It's such a way of life in our small communities throughout this country that the majority of us that live outside of that scarcely even know that it exists. And if we've had the privilege of growing up in that environment, many times we take it for granted and can't wait to leave and get on to the big lights, the bright lights of the big city and bigger and better things, you know, getting out of the small, mundane life in those small communities and small towns. And I think that is where America is losing her identity. Many of the people drawn out of what truly is the good life, enticed into the rat race, as it were, chasing after bigger houses, bigger cars, more money, the finer things in life. And don't get me wrong, there is a fondness for some of the luxuries that we enjoy today. And many of our predecessors, many of our former family members, and I'm talking a couple of generations ago, would be absolutely beside themselves to see what we have become through the advent of technology and innovation. You know, we were talking with Miss Linda Sills about her mother, who's well over 80 years old, and all the various changes she has witnessed in her life. And she's absolutely fascinated with the fact that we can video chat with Skype and get on the computer and have all this information at our fingertips, and it truly is a wonderful thing. But we have to make sure that we don't lose sight of what's most important. Of course, today was our last day at the Delaney Creek Park with Mr. Bill Strong and his family and the Patriot family members. And I was sad that we had to leave as early as we did to get back home, but you know, life calls. I would love to have spent the rest of my day with our Patriot family members and Bill and his lovely grandchildren. A couple of very adorable little girls and a couple of little boys that were quite handsome. And just good kids, watching them run around and play and just watching them be children. It was very nice. It was very peaceful and relaxing. It was a great setting, very calm and serene. No one was in a hurry to get much of anything done. We all just sat around and really fellowshipped. Jolene, Bill's wife, was very attentive to everyone's needs cooking breakfast every morning for us, fresh coffee, very polite, always positive with a beautiful smile on, and just a wonderful family. And Bill is clearly very, very blessed to have such a wonderful and supportive family. And that all of the kids were very respectful. And it was just a good time. And I wish we had the opportunity to do this more often, to really get together and just fellowship and be ourselves, you know. Nobody was putting on any false fronts or trying to pretend they weren't. They were something they are not. And it was just, it was really, really very refreshing and very relaxing. You know, all the way up and all the way back today, of course, the talk is all about Obama and Romney and the coming political presidential election. And it looks like we have Mr. Strong on the line.
He's not alone.
Bill, how are you, young man?
We're doing fine, Rob. I'm sitting here with Linda and Yo and Nick. The
hey,
others
guys.
Are out throughout the park. I'm sitting here with Yo and Nick and Linda, and the others are out through the park, and we're listening to your show. I don't know what to say, Ron. You have humbled me, and you're right. I am a very blessed man, not only with my family, but with my friends and my Patriot family.
Well, you know, I told my wife the first night we got up there, and, you know, got to meet a lot of your family, and of course, you know, waited for Linda to get there, and Yola and Nick were already there, and I was very humbled. You know, sometimes we get so caught up in our own life that we don't have time to stop and take a look at someone else's life from a totally different perspective. You know, you may not see it from my perspective because you live it every day. But you've got a wonderful, amazingly beautiful family. The level of respect that was shown, your daughter was just phenomenal. I was floored that she even thought to bother to ask about bringing the kids out, and I was thrilled that she wanted to bring them out. I had asked earlier in the day, where's all the kids? Man, that to me, that is the family, you know, all the little ones running around. That just makes my heart smile to see those little ones.
Had we known there was going to be the smaller group that showed up, Ron, we'd have had all the kids here. We'd have brought them all.
I understand. And you know, it was one of those things that, you know, most people wouldn't have asked. Most people wouldn't have bothered. They would have just done and, you know, not thought anything about it. And it just really, that really touched my heart. That had that much respect. You've done a really great job raising those kids, I got to tell you.
Thank you, Rob. I like to say, though, I live in an area that's still that way. We still hold on to traditional family values. Understands that the basis for it all is love. And you've got to give your love as much, as hard as you do anything else.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I heard something that, while it should make me angry, I suppose, at the same time, it made me kind of chuckle. Listening to the Patriot Radio on Sirius XM Radio on the way home, I learned that the Obama administration is spending something on the order of $4.5 or $5.5 million, if I remember the figure correctly. It could be much more than that. I don't remember. Trying to get television commercials on in the Appalachian mountain communities.
Oh my God.
To try to put a shine on the stigma of being on government assistance. They're trying to encourage the mountain community people to get on government assistance and not to shun welfare and food stamps. And I just couldn't help but kind of giggle because I know how independent that group of Americans truly are. And how I can remember watching some of the documentaries of, you know, some of the do-gooders and the bleeding hearts that went up into the Appalachian Mountains and the Smoky Mountains, and in particular in Kentucky, where they were really just trying to reach out to many of the poor families up there. And, you know, the very cold reception that they received from those very families, those families, they don't want their handout. They don't want that help. To them, that's not help.
No, they understand that handout comes with a hand in. If you accept a handout, then they want a hand in regulating or controlling whatever you do, or having a say in your lifestyle. And the people from this area and from the Appalachians and stuff, they don't want that. We'll look after ourselves. We'll take care of ourselves. We'll grow our own food. We don't need your help.
Well, exactly, and you know, one of the things that kind of dawned on me is that as you look around the world and we see all the different talk about the war on poverty, okay, and when someone from the big city comes out to the mountain areas, they look at people and think, oh my God, these poor souls, they're just in abject poverty, and then we have to do something to improve their life. And, you know, it never dawns on them that these people don't see their life as being stricken with poverty, and they damn sure don't want the type of improvement to their life or supposed improvement to their life that government would like to bring to them.
Well, they look at it wrong, yeah. They look at it wrong because they feel like, and they're right, it's better than the life that's being offered, because the life that's being offered comes with no nothing. And the lives they live are filled with love, happiness, peacefulness. They're grateful. They're humble. They don't need all their stuff, because that just brings trouble. It brings pressure. It brings and having a happy life.
Well, and that's just it, you know, and that's, I get so caught up. My wife and I, you know, we work a lot. Her and I both being in management, we spend a lot of time at work. And I was just talking the other night about, you know, when I sit down and I have this little log or journal that I do online, and when I look at how many hours I sleep in a day, how many hours I'm at work, I get off work, I go to the gym, I spend an hour at the gym, I come home, and when I get home, I literally have 2.5 or 3 hours before I go to bed, and then it's time to get up and do it all over again. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, weighing it out, I've got about 3 hours a day that are mine to dedicate to, you know, whatever endeavors I want to do. My daughter and her husband are much, you know, in the same cycle. And so we don't see the grandkids as much as we'd like, even though they're here living with us, a couple of them. And, you know, for what? What's the point? All that so that I can, I guess, you know, surrender to the government a large portion of what I'm working towards or for to benefit someone else other than my family. And it's really sad.
and it leaves out the basic element of all life, the thing that makes all life love.
Yep.
You know, you love your family, and you want to be involved. You want to be around them. But you also love them so much that you're trying to take care of them and provide for them. And we have really slipped, and I'm going to be honest, a lot of it goes back to the Jack movement and 3Z in the country when it became a six to seven hour day work week, fire day, and it was destructive to family life. And it still is.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for the agrarian lifestyle, you know, living on the farm and that kind of thing. I remember growing up and, you know, a lot of the farmers had what are called corn cribs, which is like a big barn that when they would harvest the corn, they would harvest it in the whole ear. And they would put it up in these large buildings, and it would dry over the fall and the winter. And come spring, there was one man in the county that had one piece of equipment that was necessary for taking that corn off of the cob, shelling it is what it's called, removing the kernels. There were three or four guys that owned trucks that were specifically designed to haul the corn cobs. You know, people had all the equipment to do the job, but it was scattered throughout the county. Not one man had all the equipment to do his own property, his own corn. And what they would do is they would all start with one family. Everyone would show up on a set day, and you know, they would shell his corn. They would get into his corn crib and they'd start hauling that corn off, processing everything, and taking it out to the grain elevators to sell it. And the women would get together and, you know, they'd set up big tables. They called them thresher tables back then. They'd set up a big line of tables. And I can remember as young as, you know, 4 years old, hauling a cooler in my little red wagon, an old Coca-Cola cooler full of ice and stuff for the men, and they would put on breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, and everybody got fed and the job got done, and the next day you went to somebody else's house and you did their corn until everybody that was contributing their corn was processed. And you know, you didn't charge one another. They didn't charge money. My grandfather had fuel tanks there at the farm, and so everybody fueled up their trucks, their equipment there from his fuel, and then when he took his equipment to their place, the same applied to him. And it was, you know, it was a sense of community. Everybody depended on one another to get the job done, and nobody complained about it.
Well, you saw some fellas yesterday, Ron, and they live that lifestyle. They're Amish, and that's kind of how they do things. They may not have the trucks and stuff, but they look out for each other, and they help each other, and they schedule things to where each other benefit from it, and they work together. And tell you what, like you and I both said yesterday, we both believe they have something going on. They got something right.
Sure they do. They've got it figured out. And, you know, it's a crime. It's an absolute crime that we have developed a governmental structure, whether it's at the federal level or the state level, that so intrudes upon a group like the Amish or the Mennonite, where they are forced at some level to participate in commerce with others within the state in order to earn some Federal Reserve notes simply so they can pay a property tax so they can continue using their own property to survive.
Yeah, until people wake up and see that government assistance is more government intervention than anything. It's interference. you guys, now Linda and Yo's here, so and Nick, so any one of them should be talking up too. So I'm repeating some of the things they say. But I don't see that the government understands how to help anything except themselves.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, and you know, if you look at one of the radio hosts I heard was listening to on the way home, made a very valid point. He and his wife donate money to an animal shelter, actually two of them. And he said, can you imagine if we were no longer able to donate directly to this charity and instead we had to send the money to Washington, D.C. and hope that at least 10 cents on every dollar that we donated trickled back to the actual charity. And there lies the problem. It's all of the administrative burden between point A and point B that consumes a large portion of those dollars. Even if the intent of the government, of Congress, of a certain piece of legislation, even if the intent is pure as the driven snow, and they purely and truly from the heart want to help people who they see as being underprivileged, it still gets lost in the shuffle, in the bureaucracy that just consumes any good intent. And the other side of that coin is that we didn't formulate or create a government with the idea that the whole purpose of government was to distribute our earnings or our property to the benefit of others as the government sees fit. That was never the purpose.
Oh, and if you want to see the failures of all, look at when the devastation hit Haiti here over the hurricane, all the money that the government gave out, every citizen of Haiti should be a multi.
Yeah.
Then you look at all the money that was spent supposedly to reestablish the economy and stimulate the economy and stuff through all the programs and everything that they came up with and all the money they spent, and it didn't do jack crap. They could have made each one of them in America, every man, woman, and child in America, with all this money they spent, a multimillionaire. That would have done more to stimulate the economy than giving it to your crony stuff, and now it's all green energy going under and everything else.
Well, what they did with a lot of that stimulus money is sent it to companies that put it overseas.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a lot of that money went overseas to prop up companies in Switzerland and other locations. But the problem with, you know, if we took the idea of if we took all the money that the government has spent on stimulus since 2008, put it all in a pool, and started sending checks out to Americans, the impact on our economy would be horrendous. We would have inflation that would boggle the mind. Because you can't put that kind of money into circulation into the economy. See, the difference is if you sent it to Americans, they would go out and spend that money. They wouldn't stuff it in their mattress. Okay, they would go out and spend it, and there would be an initial boom in the economy, and that boom would drive prices through the roof. And then everyone would be broke, but they'd have a bunch of stuff. And they'd be worse off than they were when they started, you know?
Right, because they've all lost the idea of individual responsibility, and that wouldn't mean going out and blowing the money so much as it would mean, you know, using it wisely. It isn't done. And instead, what we saw was a lot of this money. That means they were cronies of Obama, supporters of Obama. They laundered part of that money right back to the Democratic Party.
Yep.
They violated the. They turn around. when you receive taxpayer dollars and then you donate it back. It's a violation of the RICO Act.
Oh, look, there's no doubt. And that is what you're talking about. That is exactly the system that Hamilton and Clay and Lincoln advocated and Lincoln actually put into place. That was the ideal. That was the model, to funnel all this money into the federal government and then the federal government pay back those favors to their contributors in the form of government contracts and handouts. This has been going on for forever, and it needs to stop, and I don't think it's going to. And,
I don't
think
it will either, and both parties are guilty of it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no saints up there in D.C. Uh-huh. And, you know, one of the things, I was listening to Mitt Romney, and, you know, I want to make sure everybody understands, I don't think that Romney is necessarily a bad individual, bad person. I don't know his heart. I do know his professed religion, and I disagree with it. But that being said, I don't think he's a bad man. I also don't think that he is capable of instituting the policies that are necessary to fix what is broken in Washington, D.C. I think he's fully capable of espousing the policies and ideas that might give the current system a shot in the arm, so to speak, and get everyone lulled back to sleep and thinking, oh, everything's fine, the worst is over, the storm is past, it's back to normal. You know, it's kind of like that joke, okay, guys, break time's over, everybody back on your heads.
Well, I think any individual is the answer to fixing what the problem is. You're going to have to replace not only the person in the White House, but you're going to have to replace the Senate and the Congress, and then you're going to have to go to work on the states and down to the localities. It is a tremendous job that has to be done to fix what's wrong, and it means removing a whole lot of people. You're going to need a whole lot of individuals, same ideology, and that is justice. And really is looking at taking care of the people's wishes, not those elected's wishes, but the people who elected them wishes.
Right.
Well, and you know, you're right, and I think that a lot of the work that is being done right now in living rooms and backyards, in families and communities around this country, is the work that's going to pay dividends in the future with our children. And, you know, you could use the word indoctrinating if you wish, that, you know, people like yourself, myself, Yola, Linda, and others who are teaching the children today the importance of individual liberty, personal responsibility, and what it means to have a sense of family, and what it means to treat people with love and respect. That's where the real battle is at, and that's where the real battle will be won eventually. You're absolutely right. It may come from within government, but it is those children today that are going to be the government of the future. And if we don't instill in them now the morals and values, the right morals and values, the traditional values that made this country strong. And, you know, I keep hearing the term that, you know, made America the strongest country in the world. What made America the greatest country in the world and is the individual people that make up the American public, that make up our society. And sadly, through the various government programs and intrusions, it is that very society, that very community that is being diminished and has been diminished for decades now, to the point where you have a large portion or large segment of that society that looks to government for its very existence. And that is in a nutshell, the danger, the threat, the problem. Your cell's breaking up. You're going to have to climb the tree or get on top of the lodge, Bill, because your phone is breaking up pretty bad. And I know it's tough to get a phone signal up there. And I do want to acknowledge that I've got my brother Dean Shook in the chat room. And, Dean, I really appreciate you stopping by. You know, we were talking this weekend. It's not that we all agree on everything. It's that we all agree on the important things. And it's also that we support one another, even though we may not see eye to eye on every topic. And why would we? And how boring would we actually be if we were all just walking, talking heads that all agree with everything each one says? That would be quite boring indeed. And we're going to try and bring Mr. Bill back up here. And Bill, you're back on.
We're back.
Yeah, did you get on top? Dean said you need to climb up on top of the outhouse.
Well, we got the aluminum foil out and we're in a circle.
There you go. Everybody's wearing their hat.
I was talking about that young boy and girl that came up last night. You saw me hug her and shaking hands with him. He went fishing. Those were two people that, at one point here, I sat down and explained what was happening and how the was being piled upon their generation's backs. And you seen how I'm greeted and looked at now by these people. It's because they know that it's not about me that I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to help the younger people, the kids, and it was about them. And when I showed them what the debt clock says about their personal liability, their personal responsibility to the government, and then I showed them 2016 and what it said, they seen the big difference, and they understood that they were the ones who are going to suffer and pay for what this government is doing. What's disguised as being helped by the government isn't help, it's their destruction. It is their...
It is. It's slavery.
Yeah.
They're extending a hand with a smile, and they've got a set of chains behind their back that they're just... And they're going to hand them to you, and you are going to put them on yourself. And that's what these people just do not understand. And, you know, I was telling you guys a story about a friend of mine that got me involved in this, and we were talking about, you know, Liberia and some other things, and you had asked me the other night what I thought about the Iraqi dinar. And one of the reasons I distanced myself from that group, and I feel a great deal of respect and affection for them, but what I saw was their main drive, and I could be completely wrong, but it certainly appeared to me that the driving force behind what they were doing was money. It was more about the money. It was more about, you know, being able to keep all their money or making money. And that's this whole, this is why people have bought into this, you know, revaluation of the Iraqi dinar. They think they're going to buy, you know, $500 worth of Iraqi currency and become millionaires. That's not my deal. I don't care about the money. In fact, I recognize that it's the money that's put people in this trap.
Right.
You know? And it's got to be about something more than me. It's got to be about something more than padding my bank account or making myself look good. If that's all I was in it for, you know, I quit.
He
I would have
George
quit a long
Soros.
Time ago.
Right. He'd be George Soros or Barack Obama if that's all you were in it for.
Exactly. And you know, and there's look, and there's plenty of money to be made in this whole Patriot thing. You know, there's plenty of different spiels and angles to come at it from where you could really get into making money. I don't give a darn about that.
The true patriot does it because it's not about the money. It never has been. Happiness can't be bought. Freedom can't be bought. Liberty can't be bought. These are things that you have. They come from God, and they can only be taken away by the godless.
Well, and, you know, that's true. We kind of roll over and acquiesce to a lot of this stuff, and I was really tickled when we went down to the clubhouse yesterday, and on every door was that proverb, and I wish I had my Bible in front of me so that I could remember the exact chapter and verse. But basically it said, the wicked flee when no one pursues, and the righteous are as bold as a lion. And
that
is
so
true.
Appropriate.
It was. It was perfectly appropriate.
And for us to come in there, and it was on every door in the place.
Yep.
It was meant for us.
Providential.
Yeah, it was providential.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about that on all of the shows here on Patriot Families, that as Christians, we need to stand up and be bold. We need to stand firm on the Word of God, on the truth and the truth of His Word and His law, and stop consenting to violating it.
I'm trying to dodge around here, Rod. Ron, they have brought in a whole bunch of rocks from down here at the creek, and they're slinging them around in here.
They're not getting you stoned, are they, Bill?
We got geodes, we've got some that has pyrite and stuff in it, and graphites, and it's just natural here in Indiana, and there's a small set of beauty in it all.
And there's a New Yorker with fascinated.
Yeah, a New Yorker is fascinated with stones and rocks, and some of these, like geodes, you know, they're not everywhere in the country, and less of those and a few other things. But back to the whole thing, we have, it's the morality and the principles. It's the loss of family identity. It's the loss of trying to kill the identity of being an American, even. These are the things that are destroying this country. A few generations ago, you couldn't have done these things because they would not have stood for it. There would have been violence and a violent reaction to it all. And we're at a point now that I don't know what's going to come after November, no matter who wins. I don't know what's coming, because Barack could lose and there could be the riots and stuff from the left, because they've already showed they have a propensity for the violence.
Yes.
And then again, if Barack wins, there may be a hell breaking loose, because people see it's now the only choice they have is the revolution. So I don't know where we go or do after November, but we have until November. Now it's time to wake up to reality that Romney cannot say this on his own.
That's correct, and we've talked about that very thing many, many times. There is not going to be a single savior that comes into office and rescues the world or the United States, or even a single state for that matter. If we're going to turn this around, it has to come from the individual level, and people have to start standing up and demanding that our governments, both local and federal, recognize and respect our choices as individuals and allow us to continue on in our life, and we'll bear the responsibility of our choices. We don't want anyone to take responsibility for us, even if they could. We'll be responsible for our own choices, and when we fall down, when we make mistakes, when we screw up, we'll get up, dust ourselves off, and keep trying again. Until we get it right.
Absolutely. And we'll learn each time. If we fail, we'll learn from that failure. And the next time, we'll build on it. We really it is individuals. Yourself. Everybody else to be responsible for you. There is a fairness in that. There is a fairness.
Well, you know,
share everything somehow that's not paying their fair share.
I heard a great conversation on the way home about that very thing and about people paying their fair share. And this guy had called in, and he was adamant that the wealthy, as he saw it, aren't paying their fair share. Never mind the facts and the statistics that currently the top 5% of income earners pay 70% of all the taxes.
Right.
And the bottom... I believe it was the bottom 20% pay 0.3% of all the taxes. And somehow that's not seen as fair. Now, there was one gentleman that called in, and he had a very valid point, and he actually proved the point of the host about the alleged fairness of the tax structure when he pointed out that there are people that are making $50,000 or $100,000 a year that don't qualify for earned income tax credits, and they don't get all of those write-offs and credits that others get, and so they end up paying effectively a much higher tax rate, and he said that's not fair. I agree with him. It's not. The idea that we give people a tax break or a tax credit is kind of silly, if you ask me. If you're going to give a credit for a tax that's due, if you're going to give a discount, then we need to just set the rate at whatever the discounted rate is, and
well,
set that for everyone in that income bracket, if that's what they want to do.
Well, let's be real. If you're paying a tax, something's wrong.
Well, sure. And you know they were carrying on about how much more in taxes they would collect, and I don't think they understand the concept that, you know, when you look at it, the top 5% of income earners are paying 70% of all the income, individual income tax revenue that's collected by the government. 70%. And they talk about, and that's something that always infuriates me, they talk about how are we going to pay for a tax cut. Well, they've got it backwards. And only in government math can the government claim that you earning money and keeping it is a cost to government. That when the truth is the opposite, the cost is involved when government spends money. And our current economic situation is such that our gross domestic product, that is, all of the production in the whole of the United States for the entire year of 2011, was $14.5 trillion. Our national debt is over $15.8 trillion. That means that if you took every penny that was earned by anyone in the whole of the United States, every cent, took it all for the entire year of 2012, you wouldn't be able to pay the debt, the national debt. Not only that, you would have to shut down all government for the entire year, all military. Everything would have to be completely shut down, and you would have to rob from the entire country 100% of their earnings, and you still wouldn't have enough to pay off the debt.
Great. Nope. And there's no way out of that, not the way they're doing things, and there never will be. As long as their idea is to keep spending money
trying to save a sinking economy, a sinking country, which, oh, how much of that money actually goes for what they say it does? How much money is wasted on stupid or inordained crap? We have no hope of ever righting this ship.
I don't believe there is any now, not in an economic sense, because we've already surpassed 100% debt to GDP ratio. In the real world, in the world that we all live in, where, you know, you might be looking to finance a house or a car, there's one major thing that the banks look at, and that's called your debt-to-income ratio. And there is not a bank on the planet that would loan to anyone who has a 100% debt-to-income ratio except the Federal Reserve Bank.
Well,
and of course the IMF and the World Bank, you know.
The whole World Bank concept just screams at me. Corruption, wrong. It's like, I'll be honest, I have no faith in any international organization because of the corruption and the bullcrap with the UN trying to take control of everything, because of the WHO being involved in pushing vaccinations that are more harmful than they are good. You know, how can you trust any international organization? And anything to do with money always leads to greed.
Yes.
Because somebody never has enough. You got all these multi-billionaires, they ain't got enough.
No.
Because with the money, they think that they have to have power. That the more wealth you have, the more power you should have to tell anybody who has less money than you, you should have the control and the power and the say over them. And therein is causing a great deal of the problem in the world and the banking community to begin with. The banking community has all been based on fake. You know that as well as I do. Unless it's gold or silver, it means nothing.
Well, you're right. And, you know, we kind of touched on this the other night, that money and power is a piss-poor substitute for love and integrity.
And it will never buy love or integrity.
Or happiness.
Nope.
Those are things that you earn. Or that you, they come from a feeling that you get that is a God-given feeling, because everything to do about it is all about love. And that comes from God.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us the ability to love, and it's the greatest thing we have. And unless we're using that, we're never going to find the answers that we seek.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and we didn't really get into that conversation much. But the truth of the matter is, you know, talking about love, that's one of the things that marvels me about our very existence and the absolute love and benevolence of God. And that is that He gave us the ability to procreate. And until you have held in your arms and witnessed with your own eyes the birth of your child or of your, you know, immediate family members' children, and experience just a small sliver of what that perfect love is. And I think God gave us that as a gift so that we could attempt to understand the depth of His love for us.
Amen. I agree 100%.
And that's why it is such a tremendous, humbling experience when we have our own children or grandchildren or nieces and nephews, because there's a love there that is instant. It's instinctual. It's automatic. It's not purchased. It's not earned. It's not something that we have to kind of warm up to them and learn to love them. It's immediate, and it's uncontrolled. You know, it's just pure love. And it's amazing that we get to experience that.
It's a God's gift. And that was like we talked about this morning. I truly believe that that was the greatest thing God ever did. And so many preachers and people missed that. Everything He has loved us. We wouldn't be here. We'd have ended at Noah or before.
Yep.
But He did love us. So He made us an escape to get out of things. He did love us, so He continued. He made changes here or there, maybe, but He still continued to love us, and He still does. And it's like when you have a child, you do things for your child out of love, not because he's going to pay you.
Great.
Yeah, it's completely unconditional.
Yeah. Whereas with government, everything they do is conditional.
Absolutely.
Well, and I think also, you know, so many of these people that are on the receiving end of you know, these benefits and things, and I you know, it's easy to be angry at people who are receiving the perceived benefits of many of these government programs, but I believe that culturally the government has created this disconnect. That they don't recognize, they don't understand that money doesn't come from a magic hat in the Treasury Department. That money is money that the government has taken by force from other families.
Correct. You got Linda here now. He's taking a break.
Hey, darling, how you doing?
Fine. I hope you guys had a really good trip and everything was great going back.
Bad.
You talked about, and this one is the one that sticks in my craw as well, when that idiot in chief says that a tax break or a tax cut is going to cost the government money, my hair turns to flame, and not from the bottle that I color it with. I'm telling you, I get it. See, this is the point. They think it's the damned money. It is.
Well, they're trying to reflect the reality and the truth. And the truth is that any cost to government comes purely from government spending.
Yep.
It doesn't come from not collecting money. It comes from spending money. And if there's a shortfall, it's because they've spent money they didn't have. It's
right.
That simple.
And they haven't figured out how to steal more. I mean, they're doing that. You know, they stay up till 3 in the morning every damn night trying to figure out how to screw us more.
Well, trust me, they are working very diligently on it. They are currently working on a plan that anyone who invests in 401k or a pension program, that a percentage of the proceeds of that investment must be in government bonds, treasury bonds. The reason, of course, they're doing that is because they're finding fewer and fewer willing participants to
right.
buy government debt.
Exactly. So why do you think Helicopter Ben's buying all the treasury bonds?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
If they want to do that, start with the government pension.
Man.
401ks.
Yeah.
So start at the White House. Start at the Congress. Start at the Senate.
Start at the top and work it down.
And I'm going to try to, in the next few days, put together some numbers. But I'm curious to see what the impact would be if we had the 535 that are serving in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
If we put a cap on their salaries, and I want to be as fair as I possibly can be, so I think that the correct number would be $90,000. And no one, I don't care if you're a freshman or if you've been there ever since Robert Byrd was in diapers, you get $90,000 a year, and the government needs to take an accounting, an actual accounting, not an actuarial accounting where they extrapolate it out for 100 years. They need to take an actual account of all of the investments for pension funds for current and former government employees, and they need to begin to phase out the government retirement program and put all of those government employees into the Social Security program.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to take all of those current pension payments, and they need to continue paying those for the next 5 years while we phase that program out.
Right.
Any money that is in those investments above and beyond the amount required to fund them, and I think everyone needs to take at least a 15% pay cut on their current pension benefits. They need to take the rest of that money and put it into back into the economy.
That might be a good start.
Use that to quote unquote pay for the tax cuts, and let's get to
an office. You want to get honest with an office? You limit them every year to that $90,000.
Yep.
Ooh, exactly. That's exactly what I mean. It's $90,000, and there is no, you can't vote for a raise. If you decide that Congress wants a raise, then it has to be put to a referendum vote, and you need, know, all the states have to pass it by a majority.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good start as well. Romney, Ron Paul, Barack Obama, and everybody's looking to the damn government for their answers. Said that there's no single person as a savior. I got news for everybody. We already have a savior. His name is Jesus Christ. If you don't put him first, you're looking to the wrong source, folks. And it's in the Bible. The greatest of these is love, and that's what we're talking about. That's why the Patriots in this room and the Patriots across the country, they get it. And these coneheads, and then you mentioned those Lilliputian governmental Nimrods trying to go to the Appalachians. Well, back in the day, and shoot them if they could.
Well, sure, because they knew that they were, you know, a den of thieves coming in. And, you know, Dean makes a perfect point in here, and I agree with him, that, you know, that we need to end the idea that Congress gets a pension of any kind.
Yeah.
The idea is they're supposed to be public servants, and they should come in and serve their term. And if they want to serve another term, and they get elected to it, that's fine. But they need to understand that, you know, that job, that opening is not going to be there for their own self-enrichment.
Right. You look around, I'll even talk about it because it's publicly disclosed. Daryl Issa is worth $435 million, and probably more than that. I mean, that's just sitting in some place he's collecting whatever interest on it. I mean, these people are rich. They don't need a pension. Kidding?
No. Well, you know, one of the things Romney was talking about was means testing Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And you know what? I'm all for that, partly. But mm-hmm. that's only a small, minuscule part of the issue. And I think a bigger part of it is look at the money that we spend in Secret Service protection for the Clintons, for the Bushes, and all of them were wealthy before they ever became president
or ever got into the
Congress or the Senate.
You know,
and the idea that we're going to pay them a pension and pay for their own private security on top of that is beyond an insult.
It's ludicrous because, I mean, I'll bet you dollars to donuts that Bush family is worth a hell of a lot more than security service. If you guys want that, they can go get their own.
Exactly. They've certainly got enough money that they can afford private security if they feel they need it. And you know what? If they weren't screwing the American public at every opportunity, they wouldn't feel the need for, you know, private security.
Right, and there probably would not be a realistic need for it because the people wouldn't care. I mean, look, I don't care what Bush does in Crawford. You know, it's ridiculous. The guy's no threat anymore. He's already done whatever damage he's going to do. He fades into the woodwork, unlike Clinton, who's got his face on TV half the time. I mean, it's just, it's stupid. doesn't make sense.
Bush would be banned with work, but Barack Obama
would be banned. He keeps bringing it up. Hot Blaine Bush.
Blaine Bush.
Let him rest.
Well, you know, yeah, I'm still here. I was going to say that's the only portion of our government that actually fears the people. On an individual level, they do. But as a collective, they have no fear of us whatsoever. And they should be fearful.
Here's the trap, Ron. Who actually make this country free, keep us safe, do the protecting, our military is being crapped on.
Yes.
No way should a congressman or senator have more benefits than someone who put their life on the line.
Exactly.
Well, you know, Bill, we had that conversation, and you go back through the history of this country. I mean, you don't have to go any further than the Revolutionary War to see how we treated our veterans after the war.
Exactly.
Yep.
And it's continued to get worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, it damn sure hasn't gotten any better since that time.
Oh, my Lord. It gets worse by the minute.
Well, you want to charge the military to pay for their health care, but you're going to give unions a pass, Muslims a pass, you're giving people, our enemies a pass, illegal aliens a pass. They're not, as I said yesterday, yeah, we made a mistake by labeling them as illegal aliens. They should have been labeled foreign invaders, because that's what they truly are. They have invaded a sovereign nation.
Well, you know, I heard an idea floated tonight from the bass guitar player from Nirvana, and I was actually surprised because the guy's pretty damned intelligent politically. Some of his ideas, frankly, scare the hell out of me, but that's okay. He advocates that we should have everyone who is an American citizen should be registered to vote automatically. Just like when you get your Social Security card, you should get a voter registration card, and then you can opt out if you don't want to vote. You can opt out. You know, that's not a half bad idea.
Kind of in
that it would eliminate a lot of the shenanigans that go on.
Oh, you mean the busing of the SICIU voters?
Yes, it would eliminate the a large number of illegals or, you know, illegal voter registration. And they kind of joked and told the story about the guy who died, and in his will, he had it written in his will that he wanted to be buried in Chicago. And he lived in Miami.
So he could
and,
vote.
They said, you know, why on earth would he want to be buried in Chicago? And in his will, he explained that he wanted to remain active in the Democratic Party after his passing. And we joke about it, but that goes on a lot. I was sitting there listening to him, and I was almost ready to scream at the radio. And then they did pick up on the fact that actually there is not a constitutional right to vote, and that the popular vote doesn't elect the president. And I'm like, hooray, they do have brains. Wow, I'm impressed. And then he went on to advocate a popular vote system for president. And of course, when we hear that, we immediately say, oh no, that's dead wrong. But what he was talking about was interesting. I'll give you that. It was interesting in that what he's advocating is that the states get together and form a multi-state compact where states agree that whoever wins the popular vote in their state, that their state electors are bound to honor that vote.
Yeah. Like a state-by-state electoral college.
Well, correct. So we would still be using the Electoral College, but mm-hmm. the Electoral College in each state would be bound based on who went popular vote in that state.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an interesting concept. In particular,
yeah.
if you had everyone was registered, all legal voters were actually registered to vote.
Who were 18 years of age or older.
Correct.
Okay.
And you know, that's an interesting concept. I haven't had time to really work it out. The other thing that he was advocating was that we have more of a representative voting system. What he means by that is, like, over in England, instead of voting for candidates, particular candidates, you vote for the party, and there's more than two parties. You know, they've got the Labor Party, they've got the Union Party, they've got the Liberal Party. So if a party gets 2% or more of the vote, then they get somebody representing them in their parliament. So if the Libertarian Party got, you know, 10% of the vote, then they would have to have 10% representation in Congress. It's an interesting concept, but I don't want to get too far down the road of being like Europe. I don't think that we need to emulate anything that they do over there.
let's not go there, because in Greece they have the Golden Dawn Party, which is Nazis.
Well, the trick there is they would still have to rise to the level of at least 2% of the population of the county voting in favor of them to get any representation.
So last election, they got like, 6%? Something like that, the Golden Dawn.
Yeah, that, you know, that could get very tenuous.
That's scary. That's kind of scary. But, like we talk about Europeans, and it's like the same old story. People left there in droves, you know, in the 1500s, whatever, 1700s, to get away from that damn nonsense. We had a damn Revolutionary War over it, and now they keep bringing it back. It's like they're resurrecting the dead horse. I'm ready to get up the dead horse and shoot it again. You know, let's get away from this stuff. You want to be in a socialist country? Plane and leave us the hell alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we've got to get past this ideology that somehow the Supreme Court is authorized to, you know, act as a soothsayer for the Constitution and determine what it is, what it means, and what it says, because we end up with effectively the courts rewriting law based on, you know, opinion.
It's
their
crazy.
Own interpretation, and that was never an intent. That was never intended.
And
so,
beginning, these people can start reading the original intent of the founders for that branch, you know, the three branches. They were supposed to be the least effective or powerful of those three. They were not put on the top of the food chain in that group.
Well, you're right, and the whole purpose of the courts was to be a shield, a safeguard between the people and the
mm-hmm.
government as a last bastion of safety to protect the people from an oppressive and an intrusive government, and they've become anything but that.
Oh, my Lord. I mean, look at the – yeah. I mean, every circuit court, every federal court, even local courts in – every county, every state, they've become so liberal and so fascistic, it's horrible.
I believe we have a guest caller on the line, and I just wanted to say, Robert, in your honor, Kasher Pork.
What's that now?
We did have kosher pork at the gathering.
We had bacon, we had sausage, we had ham, we had it all.
Good Lord, what we didn't
have. Everybody made it home safely.
Well, everybody's not home. I'm home. Everybody
okay.
else is still up there with Bill.
I'm still in Indiana. Yeah,
I'm in Indiana.
We're in Indiana. Wow. That's amazing.
Hi,
well, Hey, Miss Linda.
I'm sitting here with Joe and Linda and Joe and Chad and it's a blast.
Well, yesterday, while you were having a good time, I basically had a reunion with Ben and Frank.
Outstanding. How is Frank?
I saw Frank's doing well. Leonie had a weekend off for the first time in a year, and we just hung out when we saw her, one of her friends. Well, we saw two of her friends, and we saw Frank. We made house calls.
Excellent.
So Frank's doing fine. He says hello to everybody. And he gave me a book to read. I can't remember the name of it, but he wanted me to read it. So I told him about the real Lincoln. He's just going to look at it. I'm going to get that for him. And then he wants to come on the show. Then he wants to come on the show. So, you know, for the next, maybe the next time, next month, Sunday or Monday, Leonie and I will go visit him and he'll use my cell phone and I'll use her cell phone.
Outstanding.
So we can have a round robin. But he's doing good.
When is he getting out of prison?
He doesn't know yet. He's going through a hard time with finding stuff, you know, like his license and everything else for that matter. So he's got to get his driver's license back, and he's got to, you know, go through a lot of rigor mortis so he can have some ID in order for him to vote for the upcoming election.
Obama needs
to
have a Social Security number.
Yeah, tell him to go down and register as a Democrat, and he doesn't have to have any of that stuff.
You're funny. Let me tell you what I couldn't sleep last night, Mr. Ron. Do you know anything about the Green Party?
Very little, other than I think your girlfriend Cynthia McKinney was once the nominee for the Green Party. I understand she was taking care packages over to Israel at one point.
Oh, let me tell you something. This Green Party, I was watching the Green Party on C-SPAN last night, right? 4 o'clock in the morning, Leonie and I were watching it. Leonie goes, wow, they're worse than Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi put together.
I think McKinney was trying to smuggle in some ham sandwiches over there. I don't know what the deal was.
But guess who they were electing as president?
Who is that?
Roseanne Barr.
Oh, outstanding. Outstanding.
No, what are you... And this guy by the name of Stein. A real Jewish socialist from Baltimore. I mean, this guy was just like a blatant... idiot.
Well, now, wait a minute. Robert, a Jewish socialist would be a Zionist.
Uh-huh. Oh, man. I don't know.
Seriously.
Right. I think you're right. I think you're right, Ron, man. Oh, man. You and I are going to have a private talk.
That would be the definition of a Zionist. And, you know, that's something I talked about with the formation of the current nation state of Israel in 1948. If you go back and look at the people who were pushing for the formation of that state, they were followers of Marx.
Man, this Green Party is, man. This Green Party, they hate. I think
they hate everybody.
They hate everybody.
They hate everybody. We're all useless eaters, guys. We've got 60 seconds left. So,
hey, Ryan,
yes, ma'am.
Is that in the chat room?
I couldn't hear you, hon.
She's breaking up.
Yeah, the phone's breaking up real bad.
I still can't hear him. Yo, you're breaking up. We can't hear you.
Tell Bill to put his aluminum foil hat back on.
Yeah, love you guys. Love you guys.
Wow.
I'm glad
you guys had a good time, and I'm sorry I couldn't have been there.
Well,
we would have loved it.
We are sorry as well, and you certainly missed out on a very
sure
a very good
weekend.
Gathering.
Absolutely. I'm telling you what, Ron. If you could, we need to research more of this Green Party group.
Yeah.
We need to do some more research on these. You know what? They really are. You know what? So I'm telling you. When I saw that at C-SPAN, I my jaw dropped. I couldn't sleep for the rest of the night.
The only difference I see in them, Robert, and the current crop of idiots that are in control, whether it be Democrat or Republican, the Green Party is less evasive about their agenda.
Yeah, well, that's where you're wrong. I hate to say it, Ron, because I tell you why. Because they're registered in 45 states. And their agenda is very, very strong.
Oh, I know their agenda is very strong. It's much the same as the current crop of progressive Democrats and progressive Republicans. What I mean to say is that the Green Party doesn't try to hide the truth of their agenda. They're front with it. They're in your face with it.
Yes. You're right.
So they're not being evasive. They're not lying to you about it. At least they're honest about it. Unlike the others.
Let's be real. They can be 190 states, but as long as Roseanne Barr is what they're pushing, who in the hell wants that?
Is that Bill Strong?
It is.
Yeah. Hey, Bill Strong.
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
I'm hanging in there. But Bill, man, this Green Party did me in last night. They body slammed me. They gave me a rude awakening.
Well, hell, Roseanne Barr's four times her size.
Man, I didn't even know they existed until last night.
Who do they have for her vice president? Whoopi Goldberg?
No, they have this real blatant socialist guy from Fairfax. No, not just. This lady from Fairfax, she was from Fairfax, California, and she gave this speech. When she started giving this speech, I mean, I was listening to it, I couldn't believe my ears. I mean, I almost had a TIA listening to her. Really?
Well, it's
serious.
That's the current the country.
I still can't hear. We're breaking up, Ron.
Yeah. Well, guys, I hate to do this, but we are out of time, and so I'm gonna get off of here and go take a shower and get ready for bed. I got to get up in the morning and go to work.
All right. I'm glad you guys.
Absolutely. I want to thank everybody. Robert, thanks for calling in and giving us that update on Frank. We certainly look forward to hearing him back on the air.
He'll be back. I'll try to make it next Sunday, and he'll be back on the air Sunday. I'll try to make him say hello to Linda Sills. So Ron, I'm glad you're back. But listen, we need to do a show on the Green Party. All right.
Well, we might have to do that. You know, we've got a couple of a slot open at least. I think perhaps for Michael's show on Saturday until he gets back in the saddle and gets settled. So maybe you'd want to take over and do a show on a Saturday. And you know, now you've got the perfect topic. To research and do a show on the Green Party.
I might do that. I will do that. I think we should do that. I'll do some more research and give you the info.
Don't give me the info. Give it to everybody. Do a show on it.
I'll give it to America. And
absolutely.
They need to know about they need to know about this party. Those are the ones that are in the grocery stores, you know, nailing you while you're going shopping.
Absolutely. Well, guys, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and calling in. My buddy Dean Shook, and we had FT in the chat room. We also had another guest in there. I don't know who the guest was, but thank you for tuning in and listening to the show. We really need all the support and all the help we can get.
Amen.
And you know, again, I wanna extend my heartfelt thanks and my wife as well to Bill and his family for all their hospitality, and to all our Patriot family members that showed up, took the time and effort to make it to Indiana for the reunion, and it was absolutely fabulous. And I must say, I'm somewhat envious that, you know, y'all get to stay there another day or so, and I'm stuck home.
Sorry, buddy.
We're grateful that you and Penny got home safe.
Yep.
And you tell Rod and everybody else, we love them. We love you and Penny. And we'll be with you tomorrow. I'll be with you tomorrow night.
I won't be home.
Well, I'll be with you tomorrow night. Of course, the only one that's been like 30 minutes here. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys.
My family considers any time. Your family.
Absolutely, and you know that's. I feel like my tent ropes need to be lengthened because my family tent has grown, and it was just it was a wonderful, wonderful time. Very relaxing. And you know, it was just great seeing everybody and meeting everybody and expanding the family. And I really, really want to thank you guys for that. And God bless you, and we love everybody. Be safe. Enjoy the rest of your time together, and we'll see you guys back here tomorrow night.
God bless you.
God bless.
Stay safe.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.